We're going to move now to appeal 25-2604, Paul Johnson versus Ridge Tool Manufacturing Company, Inc. We're going to begin with oral argument for the appellant from Mr. Cronow.
Thank you. It comes to court, counsel, Mr. Johnson. Thank you, Your Honors, for hearing this case. It's a privilege and opportunity to for you, so thank you. To start, this is a straightforward case. We have a drum machine that has a spinning cord, 285, and the defendants, under hierarchy of safety design, we'll talk about the way they decided to protect the end user is to literally put the safety of the end users in their own hands, right? That's the starting point. And we had two experts, Ted Jones, certified engineer, seven states, 30 years, Cynthia Rondo for NASA, who's on gloves for NASA, whose opinions were barred under first theory for Jones was no test. And the case law is clear under precedent of this point. Anderson, McKean. There is no need to retest a design that's on the market or that the defendant already implements. And what was the facts in this case? There was a guard, there was an optional accessory for this drum machine that would protect the end user from the spinning cable, but they could still steer and direct cable through the plumbing. Anderson is clear. That's not retested, but the district judge in this case struck Chad Jones' opinion, professional engineer, because he didn't test a design that's already available.
Well, I mean, let me ask you about that. The front guard hose that Ridge Tool offers as an optional product is not the same as the coil protection device that Chad Jones, suggested in his report. Is that right?
Correct. It's more of a rubber tube versus like a coil, like a Chad Jones's. With the other market uses is like a sling, right? Tension machine. This is a rubber hose, which, again, issue of fact, what's a better design? The fact of the matter is, either of those designs guard against someone's hand getting wrapped into a wood.
So we're dialed in on exactly the portion of the Jones report that you believe should survive 702. That's the engineering analysis and discussion in the five conclusions, which are found on pages 89 to 96 of the Jones report. Is that correct?
Yes.
This is a very lengthy report, 200 pages or so. But just so we're clear, that's the portion which you believe encapsulates this opinion.
Correct, Judge. I mean, there's way more to his opinion, obviously, than the district court even talked about. We've been guarding this interlock. But again, the issues raised by the court don't go to admissibility. They go to weight, cross-examination, and let the jury decide whether what Chad Jones says is reasonable, proper, or this machine in this industry, under Anderson, should not just be flat-out barred from like testing. It's a flexible test. When you go over the Dobbinson, you can go better than anyone. You come down to basically one factor. Was this tested by the expert in all the case law? Refutes that. Ironically, there was no opinion, no finding that Chad Jones was unqualified. And in fact, the court said that Chad Jones was qualified, right? So once he's qualified, she took no issue with his methodology. It's a professional engineer applying ANSI standards, which again, standard methodology across not only engineering, but Cynthia Rondo relies on that as human factors expert. The law is clear. The court doesn't have to agree with conclusions, right? It's just, is the methodology reliable and acceptable? Clearly is in this case, but to strike the entire opinion from lack of testing when there's multiple other opinions that he gave to go through none of those other opinions defies Daubert, defies Anderson. And the court doesn't even rely or cite to or acknowledge Anderson, which obviously is subsequent case law that came down from this court after this case was fully briefed. And why, I obviously don't know, but that's the controlling of the way it's looks. Next, if I could, I'll move to Cynthia Rondo.
Let me ask you one question about Jones. Do you agree that without Jones, the design defect claims cannot survive because he was the one opining about unreasonable danger?
In Illinois, I would say no, because there's the consumer expectation test and there's a risk utility test. Now, it's kind of sloppy as far as which test applies. Some courts say, well, once risk utility comes in, then human behavior, consumer behavior becomes a factor. Some courts say, you know, plaintiff can submit. I think the design of this case is so simple. I think because the defendant already had, we classify as a guard, right? Sure, you've noticed the defendant would classify as a guard. It's a front guide post simply. But their warning says, use a guard. The only thing that could be is the front guide. Because of those factors, the neatness, the simplicity of this product, I think it could be submitted on expert and consumer education test, which is, you know, another issue, or dismiss the claim saying there's no experts. I hope I answered the question.
What other evidence was there in the record that the product as designed was unreasonably dangerous or failed to meet the consumer expectation test outside of the Jones report?
Well, Ms. Cynthia Rondo, I think, clearly covers that, because if you were to literally follow the instructions, the ones that it's messy because they're contrary, but if you were to follow the instructions literally, your arm could end up wrapped up in this.
Isn't that really on the failure to warn claim that she's talking about those instructions?
Yes. I mean, that's also part of strict liability, right? You know, case law's clear too. Not only is it failure to warn, but failure to, I guess, have warnings that don't have gaps, right, and aren't inconsistent. So, but again, I think that's a consumer expectation. If you follow the warnings, all the warnings says, is it better to use this? Does that get to the jury without stupid reason? It was late soon, so Ms. Rondo. You know, the big issue in this case with Ms. Rondo is the court basically said, well, because Mr. Johnson didn't read the manual that was not tethered to the machine, that his employer kept in a closet, you know, all these opinions are out the door. And that is a too narrow approach of the issues in this case. And this is, again, Hakeem, another case decided after the briefing, it's the end point, talks about. You have a gap in instructions, or you have inconsistent instructions, which we clearly have here. That is a strict product claim, failure to warn, liability. The whole failure to read the manual is, at best, a strict claim, some type of comparative fault that doesn't apply strictly, right? You're not reading the manual, it's not tethered, it's reasonable misuse that's on the fence. But the biggest problem is, again, we have the label on the actual machine, right? That Mr. Johnson said he read. The label on that machine says, we'll read the user. Problem is, machines owned by the employer, kept somewhere by the employer, this manual is nowhere near to be found. Oh, and he has gloves that are being replaced from being used by other people. Which again goes back into Randall's opinion about not just the warnings, but how do you have a one size fit all glove, right, that wears out, that isn't, again, kept with the machine as your hierarchy of design to keep the end user safe. Again, you're literally putting the safety of the product in the end user's hand rather than guarding against the hierarchy of design. It's a lot. And so, again, the warning says use rigid gloves. It's a one size fits all glove. That's Randall said gloves that were provided in him, supposedly approved by Granger, sold the machine, were too big, right? Well, it's what well, the machine also said. Well, don't use a glove that's too big. What does that mean? Again, it doesn't do anything to tell the end user what is the proper right way to properly control and support cable, which is like guarding so expensive. It's Rondo, NASA engineer, literally designed space gloves for NASA. Well, her opinion gets stricken because the manual hadn't been read. It's under, again, the Anderson case, the other case cited, you know, that's totally improper from a developer position. You can go through the opinions and apply some analysis and discretion that didn't apply in this case. You know, the warning as a whole, again, when the label on the machine is incorporating the user manual, this Rondo says is not compliant with ANSI, so you can't understand it anyway. And it's internally inconsistent. You have a failure of the warning system as a whole. So to focus only on the reading of the manual does not.
I'm not sure I understand what that means.
Sure. So
did
the
Rondo provide the kind of warning that she thought should have been used?
No, because the warnings weren't totally inconsistent. Don't do this, do this, don't do that. Under
that team doesn't that, prevent the expert from providing a proper warning.
They could.
It's very difficult to defeat something with nothing.
No, under Hakeem, again, in this case, with this product, it's sold big box stores to consumers with the testimony's weekend warrior. The Hakeem is clear that the jury can decide what is a proper warning or the failure to. In this case, it's mainly in a manual, not tethered to the machine, found in a closet. Running short on time, so finally this jumps to the last part, and that goes to the dismissal of the claim as a whole. Basically, the court dismissed for not reading a manual that was physically inaccessible and substantially defective, which under the, again, Heem case, is up for the jury to decide, not the court, in fact. Back to your question, even without experts, we have a machine that rotates 285 revolutions per minute, sold at big box stores, Your Honor. No formal training, right? That's on the record. And this is not a sophisticated industrial device to market to consumers and warriors. So a jury could find that the risk outweighed utility. A feasible guard existed given the defendant's own optional accessories. The warning system was contradictory. The manual was inaccessible, which approximately caused injury in this case. And hurricane, that's enough for the jury. Reserve the rest of my time unless you have any other questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cronauer. We'll now move, Mr. Bennett, to you for oral argument on behalf of the appellee.
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the court. To address at the outset the first question that was asked today, the guide hose is definitely not the same as the alternative design that Engineer Jones advocated for. He testified and put in his report repeatedly that the guide hose is different and insufficient, and to give direct citations to be responsive to the first question, it would be an A419 as his report, where he says the guide hose does not meet the requirements that he has. And then in terms of his depositions, where he says the guide hose is not the same as his alternative design or effective, that's at A696, page 218, lines 9 through 24 of his deposition. And he repeats that repeatedly throughout the next following pages. And so what that means is that the way this argument started out is there is no situation here, like in the other cases where the court has found that expert testimony was sufficient. The cases talking about taking Anderson as an example, what they say there is, well, you don't have to do physical testing. And one factor that shows that is the defendant has the exact same product that is the advocated for alternative design. And so we know it can be used, and we know it's being used, and we know it's being used safely. That's like the door in Anderson. Here, my client, Ridge Tool, does not have the same design that's being used that is just as effective, that people like, that can be used effectively, that has a different, that has a safer situation. So this case is very, very, very different.
What do we know on this record about the relative safety of these? Of the actual device and the proposed device?
Sure. The relative safety of this is that they have no information about the safety of the proposed device.
No, I asked what we know on this record, yep. Not what we don't know.
Thank you.
Do we know anything
yes.
on this record?
Page A350 of the joint appendix is the Jones's report. It's page 19 of it, where he acknowledges that the plaintiff in this case is the only reported incident with this model. And we know...
Maybe my question isn't clear. There must be injury rates from machines like this. Do we know anything about... Maybe the injury rate turns out to be zero with the exception of this plant. But do we know that to be true?
Yes. We know for this product. I am saying that... I'm not saying there's an injury rate for every product under the sun. They took discovery of the injury rate for this product. And we have at A350 and A411 and 412 and A681, their expert acknowledges this is an injury rate of one, despite this being on the market for a long time. And our expert, which is in our special appendix six, a 40-year master plumber attached to our brief, special appendix six says in 40 years, he's never heard of this issue with this type of device. And so we know that if he looked at the data like they did at Anderson, he would be comparing.
That doesn't sound like data. That sounds like a statement. I'm ignorant about the actual injury rate of machines like this. So you would think that the Occupational Safety and Health Administration would have data on this subject. Has anybody looked
I don't believe that there is data on this subject. And I would say that it's because, like our expert says, this just doesn't happen. But we do keep records of incidents and don't have them. And we do sell and have been selling this for many years. So the only evidence in the record is a very good safety record of our product. So if he wanted to do like the person did at Anderson and say, well, I've compared all the voluminous data that's out there from the manufacturer there, the Raymond, the forklift maker, which is one of the things that this court said was a reason why we could excuse the lack of physical testing. This expert didn't do that. And so I think if you're looking at this from a Daubert perspective, what we're looking for is in the absence of physical testing, which this court says is important, what else is there? And here there's nothing. He didn't look at the data like the person did in Anderson. He doesn't have a product that we make and sell that's coming out the same. He didn't design a guard as a prototype and put it on there and show that it could work. He didn't do any of the things like this court says in Cummings you need to do to make sure that it can be used and work safely with this. There's no exemplar put on the machine. If you look at other cases that talk about the idea that you can do calculations, he did no calculations. This is a case where not only is there a lack of physical testing, which is important, there's a lack of every single other item that could give reliability to the opinion that he's offering. He was left in the end to say, the only thing that I have is I can tell you that three other companies have this device.
And there, and for that one, we know the numerator of the fraction. We don't know the denominator.
We actually have some indication that that would be a minority because there is ours, and he admitted, and the district judge cited to this, he admitted that there are many others. And I think if you add it up, there's about eight other companies that have it just like ours. So
there are other companies with similar products, multiple models per company, or?
Some companies that just have our design. Other ones like the EEEL has one of each, but the numbers, when you add it up of what's in the record that the experts looked at, would show that the approach that Jones, Engineer Jones is advocating for is a minority position.
And I'm trying to build out that fraction because the fraction ends up becoming material under the case law. You've got three as a numerator. You're indicating to us we should look at all the expert reports, plaintiff and defendant, to come up with the denominator.
Well, I'm not saying you have to go through and scour the record. I'm saying that the district judge did look at that and said, if you're going to just rely on industry standard, you actually have to show me that you've done this to show that this is an industry standard. And she specifically notes in her memorandum and opinion order that he admits in his deposition that there are other ones. And we cite in our brief that there are at least eight other ones that have our design. So the evidence that I believe is before the district court and that you can review is that this is a not industry standard. And certainly he admits, the expert admits, this was put into commerce in 2012. He admits that he has no comparable design that did that in 2012 when we made this. He said in his deposition, he has no idea what the state of play was when we made this in 2012. So I think this is a case where when you look at it, the expert has a burden, in my view, at least, to when you don't have math, you don't have calculations, you don't have a prototype, you didn't design anything, and you're just going to say there's an industry approach out there. He says, well, the only thing I did was go on the internet and I found these three examples and here's a picture of one and a drawing of one, but no evidence that that was actually the industry standard. And here, when we have a 19-page decision, I think the district court is clearly in the abusive discretion and clearly erroneous type standard of review for this. Here, because she does go through all of these steps for this, she makes a finding that he doesn't support the idea that it's actually industry standard. And I think it's clearly correct if you were looking at it de novo, but it's definitely not manifestly erroneous or clearly erroneous under the Anderson standard of review for that. So when we look at the failure to warn, you know, Rando is the other expert, and she admitted a couple of things that I think are very important. If you look at her deposition, the depositions that both the experts gave, they acknowledge that this user manual that they talk about could not have affected what didn't happen here because he didn't read it in any way. And to the court's question about did she propose some other alternative that we could look at in this situation, counsel candidly, of course, said no, she didn't do that, but she did admit that in her deposition that she didn't prepare any alternative to look at to show that our warning was somehow deficient. I think that's really important here because we have two things. We have a label on the machine, and there's a picture of it in the appendix at 256 that specifically says, that specifically shows a picture of someone's hand getting caught in the coil and says that cables can twist and catch body parts, and then specifically says to read the manual. And here he admits, the plaintiff admits that he didn't read the manual and that he did read the label that told him to do that. So we have a situation where we did warn about the cable catching. We did show a picture of the cable catching. We did direct him to the user manual. And I think Ms. Rando's failure to propose anything different is a real issue for them and means that summary judgment and the Daubert ruling are correct. And in their reply brief, in many ways, I see it as attempting to have Ms. Rando support the engineering type opinions, but they were very clear in the district court that her only opinions were on the warnings issue. And the district court noted that. But at page 986 and 988 of their opposition to the Daubert, they specifically say her opinions are about warnings. The district court did not abuse its discretion in concluding that there were no opinions about the actual label that's on the machine, and definitely didn't abuse its discretion or do something clearly erroneous in finding that this person knew about the manual and didn't read it, or that the expert did not have any suggestions on how to fix the warning. So when we look at this from our perspective, there have been a series of cases that have evaluated what to do in the absence of physical testing. And what people have looked at on whether you can get over the hump in the absence of physical testing are what else was done. And I think when you look at that, you see that it is always the case that something else needs to be done when you don't have any physical testing. And that is, looking at prototypes. Did you design something? Have you done some math calculations? Did you do some modeling? Here, this expert did nothing. And in fact, didn't do some extremely basic things like, rent one of these and see how it worked. He has and admittedly, he survived the qualifications challenge, but it's not a situation here where when you look at, did you do enough work? He can say, I've worked with these machines. He's never worked with the machines and he has no experience with this machine or anything else. And he didn't even try to use them in any way as part of his work in this case. So I think what we end up with here is the situation where there is no plus factor. There is no test, and then there's nothing else. And he's left to say, I didn't do the scientific method. It's more of a qualitative thing, which is what the district court quoted, and said, well, there's three other ones that do this. And that was not enough for the reasons the district court found. And this should be affirmed in all respects. The design claims in counts 1 and 2 can't survive without their expert testimony, and the warning has no proof of causation and can't survive without Ms. Rando's opinions. So we would ask that it be affirmed in all respects.
Thank you, Mr. Bennett. We'll move now, Mr. Kronauer, back to you for rebuttal argument.
Yeah. I'll be brief. Not really much of a choice, but let me start with you, Deji Super. The other instances that you asked about, I'm not going to use this pejoratively, but this is the game that's playing. Are there other injuries on 6500? They're discovered. Are there injuries on other machines? They've got bigger machines. They've got smaller machines. Yes. So the issue becomes that of proper OSNA, which is an issue for evidence and admissibility through motions eliminating, not summary judgment. All these issues being raised are matter for cause, not admissibility.
I asked your adversary what the record showed about relative error rates, and he said roughly Nothing. Do you disagree with that?
If there are other injuries involved in this style of machine. Is it the 60?
Not asking whether there were injuries. I'm asking about relative error rates. Jones said that there are three manufacturers that include the kind of guard the plaintiff wants. So you can figure out how often those machines injure their users. And it looks like there are about nine manufacturers that do not offer such guards. And we can figure out the injury rates of those users. Is that information in the record?
I don't believe it's in the record.
Okay.
To go back to that part of the discovery, which you're going to lay a foundation, does this company have a framework in place to determine complaints, injuries? They didn't have that in this case. Someone could call, there's a line, someone could complain, it doesn't get documented, doesn't have a chunk of evidence. Again, tort also part of the ability is to create strict liability, pass the cost of a unsafe device back to the company, not the end user. So in this situation, if you don't keep good data, it just incentivizes the company to maintain bad data. So when it comes up on appeal, there's no error rate, there's no injury rate. It goes back to when the market has an alternative design that's been tested, that's out there. Case law is clear, you don't have to retest. You don't have to redraw the example to determine whether it still applies. There's no case law that states or establishes market share determined by more likely than not standard of companies out there using it, right? Again, that's fodder for cross, whether it's four, whether it's eight, whether it's nine, whether it's two. Titanic, that's the industry standard at the time for lightweights. Is that reasonable? No, history tells us no, but the issue is if the standard becomes what does the industry do by preponderance of evidence, market share has no incentive to move because they're policing themselves, right? That's the province of the jury. That's why it's improperly taken away from the jury. We ask that the case be remanded back. Again, putting the guard aside, still have the glove. The one size fits all glove that gets replaced, wears out, and different gloves get put in. That is a bad design, violates RV design. Randall covers that, and just flat out object ripping because of the warnings, which couldn't have been read because they weren't covered with the machine, because the employer had them in the closet. And our key goes back to gaps, inconsistencies, failure to instruct, which is a strict liability. So with that, I will yield. If you have any questions, of course, thank you for your time, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Cronauer. Thank you, Mr. Bennett. The case will take it under advisement.